special nature wearing fin. I can't seem to begin. What really do I see when I step back at me? As crushing time reveals my foe. Today we have Josh Kemble with us, and Josh is the frontman for Dogwood, a legendary Tooth and Nail band. I feel like this is like one of the like OG Tooth and Nail bands. You know, Cullen and I kind of grew up in that like second wave of Tooth and Nail bands, you know, Under Oath and Watashi Wa and that whole world. But you and Dogwood are part of like the original cast. We did interview several months ago. I think it was sometime this year. Maybe it was sometime last year. I have no idea. It's all the same now. But we interviewed Stave Saker and Mark Solomon, and he's like one of the other original kind of OG Tooth and Nail people. But at least you have that claim to fame. You are an OG Tooth and Nail guy.
I mean, we were like, you know, there was a few years before we got on with the label, but yeah, we're, I guess, considered first generation by today's standards for sure. But thanks for having me on. This is cool. I feel like a black sheep. So what's up?
Heck yeah. I love it. I've been super excited for this episode, not only for Dogwood, not only for the Tooth and Nail pedigree that we have going on here, but also, I mean, you're a chef. You have a killer podcast of your own, a podcast that while I'm cooking, it's like, it's the podcast I go to. Because it's a cool time where I can chill out, listen to your sultry voice. By the way, you have such a wonderful voice for podcasting.
Oh, really?
Not
Thanks.
To mention singing, but also podcasting. You're just multifaceted that way.
Thank you very much.
And I think that the three of us would have a lot in common in regards to not only music taste, but also
actual
Mason's a big foodie.
Taste.
Mason loves experimenting, creating new foods.
Okay. All right.
I grew up with a chef mother. She instilled a lot of things upon me that
she holds her ground with anybody. Her food is incredible.
Yeah.
Nice. I love to hear that.
So
does she do food and music pairings?
She does not. She is a musical as it gets, I think.
Okay, good to know. But that's cool that you're doing some cooking. That's cool that you guys both like cooking and experimenting.
Yeah.
And I have fun with the podcast. You know, I've had some rad guests and people from the music scene and people from the non-music scene too. So it's been a great time on the Family Cast.
Absolutely. So if we could start off with something, what you like to do, your whole shtick with the podcast is that you pair music with food and drink.
Right.
And that is so cool. So
thank you.
I want to test you right away.
Let's go.
All right. So I'm drinking an Aviation, which is like gin and some other delicious things. And Mason is drinking a ranch water seltzer, the original flavor. Not sure if you've ever had it. Mason, can you kind of
also
have
the prickly prayer here?
The prickly prairie.
Yeah.
That's right.
Wait, are these official sponsors of you, or
are not? But we would like you to pair a song with each of our drinks.
Okay. Right off the top, or you want to wait till we get into the groove?
Ooh,
whoa!
It's up to you, man. Ready for it.
Well, off the top of my head, I could say that a prickly pear seltzer would either be something. I don't know if you have actually seen a prickly pear, like they call them in Spanish. They're like atún or tuna, but they're not taste like tuna at all. I don't know why they say that, but it'd be typically if you make prickly pear simple syrup or whatever to put in your gin and tonics or whatever, it's like a very pink, bright pink liquid. Prickly pear margaritas or whatever, they come out bright pink. So that puts me in the category of maybe I would go with one of Pink's more hardcore songs that, you know, whatever, just because of the color pink, whatever, or Pretty in Pink, the old, you know, throwback to the 80s. And then also I think there is, to get to more like modern stuff. Those are like, I mean, maybe, I don't know if Pink's still around doing stuff, whatever. I'm sorry. This is no shade on Pink, but, a prickly pear to me could also be, then you could take a cactus that's prickly. And, also in the kitchen, I actually cook with cactus, nopales.
Oh,
where are you guys from actually?
We're both from South Dakota
where there are no cacti whatsoever.
Oh,
if you go west, there are some like small
cactuses
west.
I have been to South Dakota many times on tour, and there's no cacti, but but if you're cooking with excuse me, if you're cooking with the cactus, you want to get rid of all the pricklies and all the things. And so I would think that, you know, off the first take, you want to, it would be a song that's at first when you hear it, maybe prickly to the ears, something that's like, oh, what's that? You know, like, I see you wearing the Undertaking hat. Love those guys, local homies, right? New school of solid state, I would say, new generation. But at first you could think, if you played that record for somebody, you'd be like, a little bit prickly to the ears. I mean, this is not shade on them either, because I love them. But then you get down to it, it's like, okay, yeah, this is good. I mean, I don't know if it's as good as, I mean, I'm sorry, I don't know if that drink is as good as their music or not, but it's the first pairing.
Oh, it's way better than their music, for sure. And I hope Austin Visser hears that clear as day.
Okay, shout out Austin. This hard seltzer is better than Funeral Psalms. But just waiting for that solid state seltzer to come out. But yeah, so I would think something like you would think it's prickly, but then once you take off the needles to cook with the nopales, and it's a very smooth, it's a very meaty vegetable taco.
Oh, basically. I was assuming it would taste more like a cucumber or something, but you're saying it's
in that
more
vein.
Meaty?
It's like watery inside. It's okay. But it has some chew to it. Oh. And it gets served a lot on side, either with beans or on chilaquiles or anything like that. I'm totally talking like, you know, Mexican cuisine here, but
yeah.
You know, and then as far as like, so that would be like a first thought pairing without trying it. I would think either pink or the color, you know, pretty in pink, or something prickly, right? That's actually not. And then for aviation gin, I know there, you know, gin is a lot of times made with like juniper berries in the mix. You know, it's very medicinal sometimes. I like using gin sometimes in different finishing sauces or whatever, because it has a lot of herbaceousness to it, right?
Yeah.
So then I think, I mean, there's juniper gets served a lot with venison and stuff like that, as on top of either, you know, you pickle it, you can put it in pickling or in the demi glace for the venison. Alternatively, you could, again, you could think of something different, like something herbaceous or herbal, like, you know, weed. And what's the first thing people think of weed in music is maybe Snoop Dogg or Sublime, you know, stuff like that, like something very, like when you're listening to it, they might be drinking something that's going to kind of get into the next plane of thought.
Gin and juice.
Yeah.
Dude, so aviation gin, Ryan Reynolds brand, right?
You gotta
sponsor this show.
please. I'll go buy a cricket phone right now.
Yeah. So those are just a couple of like thoughts off the top without knowing exactly what's in, if you're mixing the gin with something, or if you're going to, you know, serve it as part of a course on a meal, or if it's kind of like an after shift drink or whatever. So there's different moods that pair the music with the drinks. And that's kind of what we do on the show. Yeah.
It's such a novel idea and such a cool idea. I feel like it's something only someone from the West Coast could come up with, though.
I think someone from North Dakota or South Dakota could come up with something, but maybe it's also because I'm in an area of the country that is, not just densely populated, but densely populated with musicians, and a lot of the musicians crossed over into food and hospitality industry stuff. So I can talk to my favorite coffee roaster about, you know, what bands they used to be in, or vice versa, you know, or like yourself said, I'm a foodie and I really want to do that. So they come out here and learn how to cook from chefs and stuff like that.
Right. I mean, within a square block in LA or even in San Diego, you could have 100 different cuisines all represented in like such a small space, just because there's so many different kinds of people there, which is, So you probably grew up on so many different kinds of food. So you really have built a really good palate.
Somewhat
to be able to say, okay,
more now.
I've had this before, and whatever that taste is would have this sound if it was a song or something. Like you probably be able to build that up.
Well. Yeah, I was trying to tell. I first started explaining it to I was talking to Matt Carter, because he asked me about it. He's like, so how would you pair Emery, or what would you do for a solid state dinner or something like that? So I thought of basically generically speaking, like I would pick a song. I would pick a song that I wanted to play, or a dish I wanted to make, come up with one or the other first. And then I would tell everyone while we're about to eat it at one of my dinners, the reason that you're going to like this song is because of this food. I made this food, blah, blah. I was listening to this song, and now I want you to experience the same thing I did. The reason I like the song, or I say the reason that you're going to always remember this song is because you're going to say, wow, that was the best damn fish taco I ever had. And now I'll never forget this time I was listening to Emery or Slick Shoes or whoever, you know, whatever the song was that I picked. Sometimes it's Tribe Called Quest. Sometimes it's, you know, Bad Religion, but it's there. They might never forget that, or they'll forget it. And then once they hear the song, it'll immediately come back to them. or eat a fish taco that tasted like my fish taco or something. They'll be like, this would, I was listening to Bad Religion when I heard this, and now I love both things together. So, you know what I mean?
Yeah, like, for sure.
Trying to build that.
I would love to talk to a neuroscientist to try to figure out why it is that that music will come back to you based off of whatever experience you had with that music, because it is a thing. I mean, there's no doubt about that. And it is, I think it's the draw to the family cast, you know, your podcast. It's something where I'm imagining myself, like, you know, eating like a beautiful butternut squash soup or something like that. And whatever you paired with it, it's just like, yeah, okay, I get it. It's cool.
I'm glad that you can appreciate it and get it. I mean, the most recent one I just did was basically a pairing menu. I call them kitchen pairing playlists, because it's just, sometimes it's just stuff that my chefs are listening to in the kitchen. But this one, I actually said, we're going to do a coursed meal, and I'm going to pair these songs, you know, with this food or drink or both, you know. So I went through appetizers and hors d'oeuvres and salad and mains and all this kind of stuff. And then just ended the whole show on a song and didn't say anything afterwards. And it was, I had fun doing it. And then I got, you know, a little bit emotional. I was talking about some stuff, and I had this whole experience. And that's all I'm trying to do with the podcast, really, is to either relay my experiences to other people, or, I mean, I talk about how I grew up in the band, or, you know, what church life was like, and the goods and the bads of all that. And it's just been a fun time of a little bit of self-therapy, you know, and then talking to other people who not always like-minded with me. And I don't know, it's just been a learning experience doing the show.
Let's talk Dogwood, man. Okay. I am very, very curious. How did that train get rolling with Tooth and Nail? Was there a band before Tooth and Nail? First of all, I should ask that first, I guess.
Yes. Yeah. We were on Rescue Records of POD and NIV and all those guys, and other bands too. But those are like kind of the more, I guess, notable people who remember bands of those two bands. And we were all in San Diego. I started right out of high school. We were called Half Off at first, and then we changed it to Dogwood. I wanted it to be called like The Legend of the Dogwood, but, you know, people were like, that's too long for a punk name. So we just went with Dogwood.
They should have known that the Google algorithm does not like one word.
Really?
Google answers.
Oh, because it gives you too many answers. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The Legend of the Dogwood, you guys would still be much more easily Googleable.
And maybe less people would have used the name after we stopped playing, you know, like,
that's right.
There's a lot of bands out there named that. I mean, in fact, there was a Dogwood band before we started too. They were like from the 70s or something, like a Christian folk kind of band.
Oh,
but
interesting.
I didn't ask them if we could have the name, so we just appropriated it. but yeah, would you say this is more an official, like, is it a Tooth and Nail podcast, or?
We delve into everything. So we love Tooth and Nail. That's where we are most informed by growing up. And that's what we mostly listen to growing up, but we listen to everything, and we are not affiliated with anyone or anything.
Oh, okay. No, I had a friend, she was up in Orange County, where a lot of the Tooth and Nail bands originally started from. And she's like, hey, you know, I met these guys, it was Mike and MXPX, and she's like, they're on this label, blah, blah. And so you should try to get on the label. And we had just like started playing and getting signed to Rescue Records. We did two records and an EP with Rescue Records before we even went independent and got onto Tooth and Nail. So we did put out a record on our own before Tooth and Nail also. So a few things put out before we even got to that label, which was like 97, 98, I think we signed, and then put out something in 98. I don't remember. But I will say
it's damn near 25 years ago. We were
always labeled kind of adjacent, is the new hot word, to be like, you know, label adjacent or whatever, just because we knew everyone that was on the label. And then all the punk bands that were getting on the label, like they were trying to get us to sign on the label as well, or get the label to sign us. And then, so we just made friends with everybody on the label, and then made friends with the higher ups and Brandon and stuff like that. And then it just kind of worked out that way. Yeah.
What was it like in some of those earlier days being on a pretty fresh label? I mean, they hadn't been around that long. They kind of were, you know, peg holed as one specific thing, being, you know, Christian alternative. Kind of curious, what were some of those early days like?
I think by the time we had joined forces with the record label, they were still new, but they were actually gaining popularity. They're
I mean, MXPX had already probably put out a couple albums on the label.
They did. They right? had put out at least two, and they were just about to put out Life in General, I think, when we first put or first signed. I don't totally remember the timeline on it, but it was cool. Like the label was definitely having its first like big kind of moments, I would say. They were advertising in a lot more magazines, and MTV was hot on them, and that's never harmful, I would say, for a label, an independent label, to get the attention of when MTV was showing music videos and stuff like that. And and they were in Seattle, so they had like a lot of a good like independent scene around them, so lots of venues and stuff like that. So moving out of Orange County was really cool to, you know, they could establish themselves as the premier label of punk in, you know, whatever. So and then at you would also see, to me, you also saw kind of a shift in their I guess the focus of them trying to, we got so, like you said, kind of pigeonholed into selling at church stores and churches and stuff like that. But we want our artists and us ourselves as a label to be everywhere else also at the same time. But so that didn't always work out so well in everyone's favor, or, you know, like for some of the bands only wanted to do church stuff or BEC kind of stuff or whatever. So there was some space, some breathing that needed to happen, you know? So we came in, it was fun, but we, ever since day one with us, we wanted to just play everywhere with anyone, you know. That's why we were in South Dakota and North Dakota so much. And like, you know, we went to Hawaii 9 times, and like we wow. would just play on, we would play on people's, you know, skate ramps in the middle of the half pipe and someone's roof, or like, you know, a dormitory underground basement show or whatever, you know. But we just wanted to play, and because the punk rock ethos is, you just, you know, I mean, it doesn't have to be punk rock, just if you want to be a musician, you just get out there and do it, you know.
There used to be a punk band in Hawaii that I would listen to called Olivia the Band. Do you remember them at all?
Totally.
Did you guys ever play with them or anything?
Yeah, I sang on their record.
Oh, no way. Okay.
Yeah. I sang on a song on the record because Sean, our guitar player, produced their music.
Okay.
So we were affiliated because we knew them. Yeah, they used to be in another band in Hawaii, and then they actually got really good, and then they would come out to like Tom Fest and play, and then yeah, just good dudes. We always had a good time in Hawaii. And I mean, not as good of a time as we had in like the Dakotas, but you know, Hawaii's,
I can't
Hawaii's
imagine.
Pretty cool.
Right? You're, so, I think you're giving us a little too much credit there.
Yeah.
Here's what's cool about Dogwood.
Here's the one cool thing.
There's one cool thing. You mentioned that you had a self-release before you guys started with Tooth and Nail. Yeah. I don't know. This is an HM Magazine podcast, okay? We are sponsored by them. I don't know.
Is that official?
That is actually official.
So that's the sponsor. Okay.
That is the sponsor.
What's up, HM?
I don't know if we've ever had a band that has released an album with HM Magazine, our sponsor. I don't think we've ever interviewed a band like this, right? Like, I don't think,
What do you mean?
Supposedly you guys like released something with HM when you did like the self-release, right? Like you had, was there anything going on with that?
I mean, technically, I don't know. Like we definitely paid for the album, and like we recorded it like overnight when we could get the best deal on the studio. And our drummer at the time, Russ, had left the band. He was going on tour with POD. He was their roadie. He was taking tour gigs with, he played with like Value Pack on a couple of tours, and like, you know, he was doing his thing, cause he's such a good drummer. Everyone wanted to, you know, wanted him out there and stuff. So our drummer Joe was also a studio engineer. So we got a really cheap studio rate. So we did the album, you know, old school punk way, like take the whatever time we can get in the studio. So we were recording at like midnight to 6 a.m. and like, you know, making it happen. And then Brandon's like, ooh, I like some of these songs. You know, I want to sign you guys. What can we do? Blah, blah, blah. I was like, well, do you want to put up this one? He's like, no, but I think the way it went was maybe Doug will, you know, like, cause I'm not really sure if there was a H&M, like a technical label, but Doug was really like close friends with, like, you know, I don't know. Well, Pluto, cause they're from Texas, Blood and Ink, Face Down. But we were really good friends with Face Down also, cause I grew up with Jason. And so he's like, I'll put out that record. Oh, so Face Down ended up putting out their record, but we had already just signed with Tooth and Nail and put out our first album, and we took a couple songs off of that independent album because Brandon liked those songs. Never Die and Suffer were on both of those records. So if you get the Face Down release of our independent album, those won't be on there. it's missing two songs. So kind of funny story, because it was funny because Faced On, we actually, our only Faced On record was our independent record, which was pre Tooth and Nail. And so it kind of worked itself. It kind of worked out because, you know, nobody really owned it. But I think Doug wanted to he wanted to figure out a way to promote us and basically get us signed to a bigger label, I think was what was going on with that part of it. Gotcha. Like either Tooth and Nail or I think there was Goatee Records or something like more established and well-known than obviously more than being on your own.
Right.
But, cause he was also friends with our label Rescue Records and stuff, but he knew that we were leaving the label looking for things. So, sure. Yeah.
So because it was disjointed, is that why you kind of re-released that album later on?
I don't know, because we had only pressed a certain amount of copies. And so it was very limited edition, you know,
sure,
like collector's item, if you will. But you know, it was cool. Our friend is a really talented surf artist. They're out here in San Diego. He did the cover because he went to high school with us, and then he hand painted everything, and so definitely one of a kind thing, drew the logo and stuff, so that was kind of its own thing. And we toured on it. We played it around Cornerstone and toured across the country with that record. And it just, since we got signed to Tooth and Nail, I don't know, Brandon kind of only, you know, quote unquote, only wanted those two songs from it or whatever. So there's this whole album of songs. And so Jason's like, dude, that'd be so easy. I just redo some artwork and put it out and done deal, you know, Face Down Records.
Right.
Yeah.
The only problem was we were all on two labels at the same time.
And this is not a new album. That's a great name. Yeah. That's a great name for that, by the way.
It makes sense.
I would like to talk a little bit about Building a Better Me, because I think that is your magnum opus, personally. So Mason and I are, I'll say it this way. Mason and I are not the biggest punk fans. We'll be honest about that.
Oh, I gotta go.
I'm sorry. But I will say that Building a Better Me in particular, as well as More Than Conquerors to a certain extent, those albums are so catchy.
Thanks.
I'm curious to know where your kind of mind space was when you were making those, because you're not going about the typical punk ethos, fuck the system kind of belief, as far as I can tell. It's very
or
positive.
Am I?
Maybe you are. Maybe you're playing this 4D chess kind of deal.
Yeah.
But it feels like this really positive punk ethos. Tons of hope, tons of belief in prosperity, and for the, if not now, for the future, internalizing everything, instead of, you know, blaming someone else, maybe blaming ourselves for our own problems and realizing that we have to fix things on our own. Yeah. Just very curious where your mindset was at the time, because I really resonate with that. I kind of get burnt out on the cynical nature of punk music. And that's mainly why I don't stick around to listen to a lot of punk personally.
What do you listen to, if I may ask?
I would say Mason and I both, we love post-hardcore, love hardcore, post-rock. I don't know if you're into post-rock at all, but.
What band is post-rock?
So Mogwai, Sigur Rós.
Oh yeah.
Explosions
in
the
Sky. This Will Destroy You kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I would say it's and then some indie pop type stuff. Where we, you know, butter our bread, I would say.
I like buttering bread a lot.
So do I.
Hey.
I saw a joke the other day that was like, you remember when your grandma would say this is, you know, the special ingredient is love? What she really meant was butter.
It's butter or MSG.
Right.
I can really answer that question in detail if you would like. I don't know how long the podcast is supposed to be, but
go into as much detail as you like, because I'm here for it.
Hi, Cullen. I'm here. I'm over here in San Diego, and I'm here with Mason and Cullen. Just kidding. So if I can go back to my first aha, wow, whoa, holy shit moment with punk was hearing The Clash on the radio.
Mm.
Because so my mom, she liked a lot of heavy rock. She had a huge vinyl collection of Kiss and Aerosmith and Boston, like that kind of those kind of good records mom. And stuff. And then my aunt was big into like lowrider culture with you know, cholas and, you know, the whole Mexican scene in Southern California. That's our family heritage. And then my their brother, my uncle Peter, he's into like radio pop music, so Prince and Stevie Wonder and Michael Jackson. So all their record, they all had a huge vinyl collection of those genres, respectively. My mom didn't have anything like Prince and Michael Jackson and so on and so forth. So when I'd spend time with my aunt and uncle, I would either go, I was going to parties with her because she was supposed to be babysitting me, but she was just taking me to all the parties and stuff with all the, you know, all the fun, the cool gang members of the town, if you will. So I was down with everybody, but I saw a lot of things that maybe a kid should or shouldn't see, but they were always listening to this music and having an experience. So whether there's, if we're doing a carne asada cookout, there's always rad music playing. So there was already this kind of food and music going on without me knowing it. But I mean, that's more related to like the food and music stuff. But I was with my uncle and the Clash comes on the radio. And I was like, this doesn't sound like anything else that you listen to or anybody in our family listens to. And I have ADHD. And that was really like, I was like, you know, I remember turning my head, you know, when someone shows you a CD or something or streaming now or whatever, that, and people are trying to like show somebody else, they'll, for some reason, we look at the speaker, we look at the stereo, like it's going to like talk to you in the face, you know. You. Have you ever done that? I don't know if am I the only one? Yeah, like check this out. You put it in, you're both like staring at the CD, like in the stereo, like what's happening right now? We're looking at the music. Wow, that's a trip, man. No, so the Clash comes on, I'm like, okay. And he's like, oh yeah, that's, you know, that's punk rock. And they weren't playing anything on the radio like Sex Pistols or Minor Threat yet, but Clash was on because they had a couple of really poppy, catchy punk songs that could be on the radio with like top 40 stuff at the time. So, you know, then boom, I grow up, life, that was when I was like 6 or 7. And then I grow through school, go through high school. By the time I'm closer to the end of high school, you know, we were a church family, grew up in the Calvary Chapel kind of, you know, non-denominational scene in Southern California, hippies, surfer hippies that became musicians, that became the born agains and all that. My mom got remarried to this dude and he started taking us to Calvary Chapel. And everyone at our church happened to be someone from music, you know, musicians, hippie guitar, acoustic guitar players, or, you know, former drug dealers that now do everything for Jesus and write songs about it and stuff like that. So, I mean, and this was like almost everyone in the church until the church started growing. But so I always kind of had this like look, this kind of like, looking at these people, or like, you know, is there anybody here like me, or like this church is different from our growing up kind of Catholic church and stuff like that. But there was always so many people that were nice and loving our family when my dad left, and like taking us in. And there was always when dad leaves towards the end of my high school career, I'm start just like, you know, listening to hardcore music and punk rock music and writing my poems down and stuff like that, being more like that. Like that's, you know, this was when like more like grunge was happening and stuff, but when grunge was still like kind of punk at the same time. And so I got introduced also to like skateboarding videos and snowboarding videos and surfing videos, which all had a rad, amazing soundtracks. Typically it was like early punk and hardcore music that was on those. And I got really attracted to that. A lot of energy. It really spoke to my brain firing neurons all the time, you know, with the undiagnosed ADD at the time. So I wanted to do that, you know. And then when I started getting into skating and snowboarding, I wanted to go pro in snowboarding in particular. And so I was like, I need to start a band so I can get on these soundtracks. And then like go on kind of, I had a plan to like go on tour with these like snowboarders and do the videos and stuff like that. I had this whole like weird vision about it. Not like woo woo vision, but like, that's what ooh, that'd be so cool to do and get sponsored by Denny's. And like, you know, I'm serious. That's really what I wanted.
Was Denny's like a big sponsor for that kind of thing?
It's because, no. It's because,
okay, I was gonna say.
It's because they were always open, and after concerts, we'd always just go hang out there.
Oh, so cool.
So it was 24 hours, you know, like so they had cheap stuff.
So that's the West Coast version of what all the hardcore bands do for like Waffle House in the South.
Waffle House, yeah. Shoney's, like yeah. Anything that's open. Yeah, anything that's open.
Was there a Midwest joint that you guys would go to that was always open that you just knew was going to be there?
Waffle House for sure. Something like Steak and Shake.
Oh yeah.
It depends on what area. Anything outside of a major city, it was harder to find stuff. And you just go wherever's off the freeway. A lot of times, it's just Walmart. You know.
Yeah. For sure.
But then with the punk rock journey and then writing into, you know, growing up Christian and church youth group culture and everything that comes along with that, the good and the bad, I was writing about it. And I always was, check this out, the black sheep.
Someone should start a podcast about that.
Dude, except mine's called just Black Sheep, not the black sheep. Oh. It's different. Yeah.
Really different.
Yeah, it's way different. I was always like, hey, wait a minute. My dad, the stepdad who brought us to church, was before toxic was a word, but so toxic, you know, he was an asshole. And but the whole time he was abusive and being in the middle of his assholery, he was being churchy at the same time. And I was like, this something doesn't sit right with me. But I was really into youth group culture and I liked going to church and I had great friends that I still have to this day from that scene from that church and the music scene too. But I was trying to absorb it, but also like something's amiss here, you know, because like the church is like trying to help us, but like this guy sucks. And like, you know, he ended up leaving. And then it was just like a weird situation because I was like a junior or senior in high school. And I'm having all these like weird things happening already with my in just regular life. If my dad was awesome, that would have still been happening. But at the same time, I was like, well, church is like important to us, but like a lot of people who go there are just like so lame and weird and a lot of hate and judgment also, but they're also like, there's this tension that I was living in. And so I was just writing about that the whole time and asking all these questions because sometimes honestly in that church scene, you aren't allowed to ask those questions or like, well, they're like, hey, don't touch your girlfriend or, you know, don't have sex before marriage. Like, okay. And then what happens what happens if you do? What happens if you do get pregnant and we're still in the youth group or whatever? That's an example or whatever. So there's all these like questions that, I mean, sorry to all these youth pastors that I was boggling their mind. It's like they weren't really trained to answer those questions, at least at the time, at least not the ones that questions I was asking. It's like, so what if my best friend is gay or is on drugs? How do I help them? Or can they come here? Like, I feel like sometimes the church was like, no, or like, you know, they want to be welcoming, but then when it really comes down to it, it's like, you have a problem, right? You must get help. And I'm like, okay, help me. I'm asking for help. I am literally asking you for help. So why are we fighting? And so in the song, so then I got to start the band and then I got to like sneak in those questions and sneak in all those like black sheepy kind of rebel-y kind of questions. So I was like really into like rebelling and ruffling feathers and stuff like that. Cause I was not totally a good kid, but I was also trying to be at the same time because
if you grew up with all the cholos and cholas, I can't imagine that everything was squeaky clean, right?
Yes and no. I mean, cause sometimes that they, you know, growing up in an apartment complex with a bunch of other impoverished kids or fatherless kids, it's like, we all kind of stick together. Yeah. So we all kind of do take care of each other, even though there's like a lot of fights and, you know, drugs and bad stuff that are happening. At the same time, I didn't totally choose to buy into like the whole, like the gang culture that was happening around me, or like I was friends with everybody and I was friends with all those guys and I knew all those families and we all would have food together and stuff like that. But I, you know, at the same time we knew whose dad was beating up who and like whose moms were dealing drugs to who and stuff like that. So like we see all this stuff as kids or as teenagers, or as we grow older, we still see it. And you're like, something's not right. Like what's happening here? So I would try and ask those questions in the song. And sometimes I could say it in like a minute. I mean, I would write songs about whatever I wanted to, because I was taking some of my poetry that I was doing. It's kind of like journaling or whatever, but I didn't know it was at the time that it was a journal or a diary. And so I'd cram these poems into these songs because we played really fast and, you know, aggressive and skate punk basically before that was a coined term. And I was always enamored by the hardcore scene and the metal scene too, because of that just like, that ballsy energy, really, you know. And then I wanted to be like that, but I was so goofy and awkward, and like my high-pitched nasal singing voice was not quite developed yet, because I was young and I didn't know anything about music. They just said, hey, you're crazy, you want to join the band? And I was like, sure. And then we did it. And then I was just always, and still am, really, when I write songs, I'm still really looking for that answer, like, hey, where is God in all this protesting and rioting and killing and stuff? Like, where does God fit into this? And or in any song I wrote a long time ago about, you know, I'm not trying to condemn somebody, I'm really actually trying to have a conversation. Like, if you hear the songs and you really break it down, it's like I'm really talking about two people kind of talking to each other, or like somebody's asking questions. Well, what about this? What about, you know, it looks like Christians are all perfect, but you're telling me I'm gonna like go to hell if I don't agree with you? Would you send your best friend to hell, kind of thing? You know, I'm like, let me put that in a song and see how many people can respond to this, you know, improperly or properly or whatever. So right.
Yeah,
I got a lot of flack over the years for my words.
Yeah. What you're getting at, I think, is what Cullen was sort of getting at, in that, you know, a lot of punk, there's like kind of these pat answers, like this is what's wrong, or mm-hmm. or if you kind of go like the more pop punk route, like it's, you know, it's just girls, sex, and drugs kind of thing, right? Mm-hmm. Like, but mm-hmm. the punk that you were writing really just like deals with the complexity of life. I mean, you just described it with like growing up, like, yeah, there was like the bad of like the, you know, you were around gangs and drugs and abuse, but also like the people you grew up in that apartment complex, like you were a family too. So like, is like there's a complexity to it, right? Like it's not all good and it's not all bad. There's just this complexity and you're kind of holding it all together. And I think that really comes across in a lot of Dogwood stuff. And I think that's exactly what you're getting at, is you're just like really good at holding this complexity and not trying to have an answer either way. You're just wanting to hold it all together because that's what you do really well.
Thanks. We were trying to. Sometimes I could figure some songs what people would think, like, oh, you know, you guys are like militant or like, you know, condemning or whatever, or like judgmental. It's like, I could see how you think that, but like, let me break it down for you. And I over the years never really explained my songs to people, because I was always like the shy. I mean, I'm not shy, but like when it comes to like my music and singing and stuff like that, I barely like to even show my family what I'm recording, you know?
It's such a vulnerable thing, right? I mean,
it's very scary. Vulnerable. I think it's because, and my wife would tell you this because she's a therapist, but I started writing the stuff when I was going through almost trauma, in either in the church or in my own life or with my dad or family or whatever. So I, at the time when I was experiencing trauma, is when I started doing the music and the band. So that's kind of always stuck with me. And, you know, I don't know, maybe that's why I don't like to tell her she's right. But, but then at the same time, I always really appreciated with all its warts and everything, like the good that the church did for my family, you know, there was always like an element of, you can make it, we'll help you do this, you know? And so I try to give that to other musicians or people through either the music or now through culinary, because back when I was in the youth group stuff, we were at someone's house and we did like a spiritual gifts test or something like that, spirituality gifting or whatever, and I actually came up with teaching. Mine was teaching and hospitality, and so it kind of like, and that has actually stuck with me through since high school, in all the careers and stuff that I've done. I do teaching culinary and teaching at-risk youth and working with nonprofits. And I think I'm a sucker for the nonprofit world too, because of how I grew up. Cause I was that kid that I'm helping, you know?
Right. One thing, this is a little off topic, but I think it's worth mentioning. There was like a 7 or 8 year period where you guys basically put out an album every single year. That is like, incredible. And I understand that, like,
I don't know, you know, why that happened.
I understand, like, in some ways, like, you know, punk music, it's just like three chords in a cloud of dust, although I don't think your music is only that. But there is something that's incredible about the fact that for 8 years you basically were putting out an album a year, where now it seems like for a lot of bands, especially bands from the scene that we're in, and a lot of it's just due to the fact that, you know, lives are different, people are adults now, but
like maybe we get an album every 4 years, right?
Yeah,
where,
yeah.
And you know, when you were in high school, college, that age, like you were basically doing 4 albums in 4 years, right? Like it's just, it was such a different time. And anyway, I find that very interesting. Like, I don't know if you think about like how much you were putting out in such a short period of time, but it's just incredible to me.
I get reminded on when I do these shows, like when people talk about, like, they're like looking up our releases, like, whoa. Holy shit, you guys, you never like stopped. I mean, because we would go on tour and be writing the next album like in the van, or like even, you know, playing, practicing in like another state or whatever, we would just write the whole new stuff. And we never really took that like time to, I guess, tour it more. And also with us, we didn't really like go on like co-headline tours or open for somebody. We just kind of went out and toured. And I wouldn't even call us like real like headliners per se, but we were just out there. So we were just always doing whatever, taking whatever. Our path was kind of, our journey was kind of just kind of like flippant and like, let's do whatever we want. This is fun. Let's have some fun, you know? So it wasn't like serious, because I think a lot of the really crazy serious bands, those are the bands that wait between albums, tour for 1 or 2 years, now longer, like you said. That's crazy to us. We didn't even think about not putting out a record. Like it didn't even occur to us. And also, to be fair, the label didn't tell us to not do it either.
Yeah. Probably a lot of trauma processing real quick at that time, right? You just got to, you got to put that out as soon as you can, right?
Putting out fires, you know?
Let's bring your wife in here. Let's talk to her.
Oh man. You know? Yeah. I mean, she was obviously known. She's known me since maybe our, you know, after, right after our first record came out, that's when we started kind of dating.
Wow.
But
congrats to you guys.
Thank you. On Building a Better Me, there's Comes Crashing Song is about her and our relationship before getting married and stuff. So that's the, because we wrote that on the road when we were broken up. And I wrote it kind of like, check it out, you know, your world's about to end because we're going to get married.
Of course, that's the song about your relationship and not necessarily like the marriage part, right? Like of getting married. Like, do you have any songs about your wedding day?
Bro, I was saying like, you're going to find out that breaking up with me is a bad thing, you know? And so, because I never really wrote songs about la la girls, girlfriends. Yeah. You know, I wasn't really like that because I was too busy talking about politics and topics and, you know, religion and
why existentialism.
Kind of. I was just, yeah. I thought it was so deep. Like, oh my gosh, here, the church, you know, can do so much better because, you know, they did so good for me. Why can't they just do good for everybody? And why isn't this person welcome? Like all this stuff, I was trying to answer all these questions to myself, which, so I was thinking like, yeah, it really is. It's not only a trauma response or whatever, it's like self therapeutic and cathartic and stuff like that. I'm trying to make the music help me. And, you know, fortunately it came across to other people. Sometimes I've heard that maybe it has helped them too, but more often than not though, I just really pissed everyone off. So in true punk rock spirit, I was, you know, I pissed people off because I was asking the questions that they were too afraid to ask.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Maybe so.
And I think that's why like punk had such a strong appeal within, you know, the Christian alternative scene at that time, especially because there's a lot of kids asking those same questions, but no one was really framing it the right way. And they felt like they were alone. And then they hear something like Dogwood and they're like, oh, these guys get it. These guys know where I'm coming from. These guys know what plights I've been living for all these years. And I think that's where the resonance comes from. I mean, that's why we're still talking about Dogwood in 2022, even though the last album was 2003. Right.
I mean, if I was to strictly talk about not only just an awesome band or like the label itself, like Tooth and Nail, I would say that I resonated most with Strong Arm. On the label, because they were just bleeding heart lyrics about just the way that their emotions and feelings about church, really. They were talking about their relationships at church or, you know, whatever that was with God or people or whatever. But they were just so emo, kind of like in that sense, you know? And there was other bands too, but like I really resonated with them in that sense. I've always like really loved the way that there's just their songs are. And I know there's a lot of other musicians involved with Strong Arm now. And now that I know more about know more about the scene that they came from and stuff. But at the time I was like, oh, I've never heard a band like this. And I was always like, I mean, I should just write every single thing that I'm feeling into this song, you know. And it might sound cheesy, but I'm okay with that. Like you said, it's vulnerable, and I put myself out there in the band, I think, because why not? Why wouldn't you? Why would you go into a band and not put yourself into it, you know? Yeah. Just to be like a gig worker or something, you know? Right. And why it's kind of like being a chef. It's like, why would I not put everything into this, even if it's a taco or whatever? Like, make it awesome, you know?
Absolutely. Speaking of making it awesome, the question that I would love to ask, I fancy myself as a singer, and yeah? I am
let's go
fascinated by your singing style, man. You know, I think that you could have been in a straight up hardcore band.
I was like, trying.
Like you definitely have like more melody than most hardcore singers do, but you have all of like the thrash and grit and I would say vitriol within your presentation. That it definitely could have been like a DC hardcore band.
Whoa, thank you.
I'm absolutely in love with it. Also, I don't know how you did it for all those years like that, because that sounds very straining to the voice.
It was every once in a while. I think mainly when I would like get sick or something, like it would be like, oh my gosh, like when we were touring Canada or something, I was like, I can't do it. But I still did it, and the voice got even like raspier or whatever. And then of course, well, first of all, thank you, because I was always trying to put that energy into the songs, and I didn't really know how to pull it off. I think on our first maybe, you know, record, and maybe even that first two records, I really love hardcore and the ethos of that whole scene and the punk rockness of it. Not so much into like kind of like high pitched screaming metal, but like more like I really like the Crucified, like Mark Solomon's stuff, and that kind of thrash, Metallica, and you know, I mean, we haven't gotten into like what you're talking about, like give me your best favorite influential bands or whatever, but I would say that the California sound of punk rock and hardcore, like the old stuff, like say like Black Flag and Blast and Bad Religion, those are all right around me, you know, like that's skate and surf culture, like because they're literally talking about surfing and skating in some of their songs. And that's what I grew up with in the when I started doing punk and stuff like that. And a lot of the bands that I started listening to, now that I think about it, Green Day, Bad Religion, Offspring, Pennywise, those are all from California, you know. And then when I really got into other stuff, like I said, like Strong Arms Florida, and then like DC Hard, you know, Minor Threat and all those guys, like, oh, there's so much more to learn. Oh my gosh, feed me. And I was, and my, you know, if you're into like Enneagram stuff, I'm a seven, I'm a glutton, I need I'm an Epicurean, I want more. And I could really just, I don't know, I felt like sometimes they're talking to me, or the music is talking to me, like the music in general, like spiritually is like seeping into me. But that's because I was also searching for that. I wanted that when I was a kid and teenager and a young adult. It's like, give me more of that, like what you were saying, the vitriol and the hardcoreness of hardcore. You know, not just the ethos, but like the raw of the hardcore, you know?
Great word. Yes. Love that word.
Yeah. Yeah. G-U-H-G-U-G-A-H. But yeah.
Next word in the spelling bee.
Yeah.
I feel like it would be remiss of me to not ask, but the last album was 2003. So almost 20 years ago, almost two decades now.
Oh, damn.
You guys did put out a new song. Almost 5 years ago, so a half decade ago now. Is there anything, and you mentioned that you've been writing and you know, you're still doing music. Could we expect anything from the Dogwood Camp at any point, maybe in the next few years or something? Like what is it that we could expect from Dogwood, other than you just talking about it on podcasts?
Or even just Josh Kemble.
So to answer, all those questions, it's like, it's just, Dogwood as a whole, we all live very far apart from each other now, you know, separately, even in California. California is a really big state. So we're all decently far, but that's not impossible. Nothing's impossible, I would say. But then there's the, you know, job life or whatever, because not everyone's doing music now anymore or whatever. So I would say it would take a miracle to do the Dogwoods.
What if Furnace Fest calls you guys up?
I mean, I talk to Chad a lot, he's asked, you know, can you play this year? Can you want to play next year? Which I think is very flattering and awesome, because Chad's a good dude, and to be just even involved and asked to play is awesome. But I'm like, I don't know if, you know, my schedule is decently flexible, like, you know, as far as weddings and events and cooking and teaching and stuff. I don't know about everybody else if they would want to do that or whatever. So that's kind of why I just kind of kept writing music, I think, because I didn't want to like keep saying like, I'm going to make another Dogwood thing or whatever. And Seismic was the last like official Tooth & Nail full length. And then we did the kind of best of, and we did some new songs on that. And then we'd pepper in we would give a demo track to somebody's compilation or something that was unreleased. So it's kind of like, let me see where this kind of heads, because we weren't touring. So I was like, how is it, you know, we should just, I'll just put out music for fun. And then I never really stopped writing. And then back in 2019, 2020 or whatever. I wonder which song you're talking. Which song are you talking about, Mason?
Did the thing with Indie Vision. I don't know if it was like an old demo that you guys like re-released or something.
There's a big compilation at that time. Was that a part of it?
Yeah.
Yeah. We would do oftentimes. We would give Brandon from Indie Vision a song to put on the compilations, because there was a few actually that he did, and I was like, that's cool. Brandon's always been very supportive of us or whatever musical endeavors I'm involved with. So that's very nice of Brandon to keep that hope alive, you know. But then I wanted to put out music again I think it was 2019 or 2020, but it was definitely I think it was pre-COVID. But anyways, we have a bunch of songs that Danny, because when Danny came on to do the Seismic album, and after Sean had left, he had music, but he only had that one album. So we had all these songs that he had written that we didn't get to record or whatever. So like, let's finish some songs. So Danny and I put out a couple of things as the name Saint Didacus, who is the patron saint of San Diego and the father of teaching and stuff like that. So I was like, I'll just call it that, because any musical project that I do, I'll just call it Saint Didacus. But then it kind of became like more of a band, because we got people to collaborate. And I decided that I wanted to work with bands and people that I haven't worked with before, because now it's easy to kind of do that, you know, file wise and stuff. So recently the last few songs have been with like Mike from Fighting Jacks and Joe from Slick Shoes on drums. So like, we're collaborating together and creating. So, you know, I don't always like when people say, you know, my band Dogwood, or like, you are the band or whatever, you can keep doing it. I was like, I know, but like, I want kind of everyone to be involved from Dogwood to do it with me, and not just be like the sole member of Dogwood doing something with somebody else for the sake of just doing Dogwood. You know what I mean? Like, I can kind of pass the torch and give that to other young punk bands that need guidance or whatever the case may be.
Let's do your top five most influential albums. I'm really excited. Oh, this can be done, you know, chronologically, however you want to do it. But top five, you ready?
I mean, yeah, there's so many. They're all my top five. No, just kidding. I hate when people say that. How can I choose one? No, everyone has their favorites of everything. Like, that's your favorite chicken.
That's right.
Right. That's
right. Your favorite chicken. That's your favorite Mount Rushmore sign right there.
Yeah. That's your favorite child.
Hello. Be quiet, kids. So, man, top five, I would say, and are you talking on a label or anything?
Anything. Yep.
Okay.
Anything is fine.
Okay. Yeah. So, right off the top of my head, I would say A Tribe Called Quest. The Low End Theory is like so good and fun and smart, and like, I don't know, just when that came out, and it's one of those albums that like, and that was kind of right when the skateboarding industry started playing more rap and hip hop on their videos, and it was their second, it was their band's second full length release, and it was I don't know, it's hard to explain. I have multiple versions of it on like vinyl and CD and stuff like that, but every song is just fun and serious. They're talking about serious topics, and I think as far as influential, it inspired me to seek out like kind of where they got their samples from on that record, and find those records that were like jazz and Afro beats and even some punk and stuff, because they're basically like, you know, speeding up or slowing down the samples to make the song work and stuff like that. and then figuring out what they're talking about in their lyrics and stuff like that. Because what I found out was, you know, they don't look and sound like a lot of the other bands I listen to be honest, you know, because they're not punk rock in the sense of like a double time kick drum beat, but at the same time, they're a punk rock in the hip hop sense of, you know, doing what you want. They don't really sound like a lot of other artists out there besides maybe a couple of the tribes that they ran with, like De La Soul and the Jungle Brothers and stuff like that. But they're Southern. They're Southern, and they put their area on the map for sure. I don't know. It just
so laid back, man.
It's just everybody in the band had a laid back groove, even though he, you know, sometimes you could hear a little bit of anger and emotion in their voice.
Oh, totally. Time, especially in lyrical content. Lyrical content was really angry a lot of times.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. But they're fun. It's like party music and just some of the best music to come out in the 90s, to be honest. It's on, they make a lot of lists. They make their way onto a lot of like best of lists.
Rightfully so.
So yeah, that's one of them. And I don't know. That's not like, maybe not like number one, but it's definitely up there. And then another one off the top of my head is Bad Religion, Against the Grain. I can't say enough about Bad Religion. As you know, if you've listened to my podcast, they come up a lot, and I'm doing a whole series on them right now. I don't know, just super smart. But really what gets me about them is his honest critique of the church and the way he talks about it. Even their logo, the cross, you know, no cross kind of logo. Even that is he's saying that he is against the commercialization of Jesus in the church. I was always thinking, why can't more Christians understand that? This church is not a business. There's a reason you have nonprofit status and you don't pay taxes and stuff like that. It's like not fair to other people who are blah, blah. That's just one thing. But like the lyrics are so smart. And he's always talking about between the two main songwriters, they're always talking about like questions to God. And that really inspired me in my own spiritual journey, for one thing, like a new way to read the Bible, to find out what these guys are talking about. Why do they know so much more about the Bible and Christianity than I do? And you know, they're Jewish. And then also, I mean, no offense to Jewish people. I'm just saying like they aren't Christians. These guys aren't Christians, but they have a strong critique because of the wrongs that, you know, that the church, the atrocities that the church has done or religion has done over the course of humanity. But then I'm like, what else are they saying? You know? So it really got me thinking more, which is what good art should do. Whether it's art, like art or music or culinary art or anything. It's like, what is the artist really conveying to me? So the inspiration was, I need to write better lyrics. I need to write stuff that makes people think. I need to write stuff that's going to make people question themselves and question the things that they think about and believe and intake and stuff like that. Cause even so on Dogwood on stage, if I was like, quote unquote, preaching or saying a message, I would always say, don't take my word for it. Find out for yourself. I'm like, we're not robots. I'm not meant to be like, yes, pastor. Yes, I'll do whatever you say to the bitter end. It's not like that. It's not supposed to be like that. And a lot of the problem with a lot of churches and religions is that we are like that. And for me, I was always like, I'm not going to do what you say. I'm going to go my own way and find out for myself. And I always thought that Jesus was super like punk rock and he had socialist tendencies and, you know, other tendencies that other, obviously the church hated him, you know, like, let's be honest, the church killed Jesus. Jesus wasn't a Christian. I hate telling people that. Cause they go, oh, what? Yeah. I'm like, no, Christian, whatever. So Bad Religion inspired me to think like that, to look at Christianity in a way that was new to me. And I think that album in particular, Against the Grain, is even those three words is the very core of why I started Dogwood.
Love that.
You know, to go against the grain, even to go against the mainstream grain or to go against the secular world or whatever the case may be. I wanted to be different and let my freak flag fly in the band and stuff like that. So if you look at videos of me, I'm very goofy on stage, but I'm trying to say something serious. So it's kind of this dichotomy of like personalities happening, you know, like, but at the same time, I was like, just trying to get all these thoughts out to whoever would listen, right? Which is the main struggle of a teenager.
the best thing about Bad Religion, in my opinion, is imagine you were a college student who just loved animals and you show up to your first day of your zoology class and the lead singer of Bad Religion just shows up and he's your professor.
Imagine that. I would love that. I'd be like, I bet, I mean, honestly, there's got to be some students that just take these courses for that.
I would imagine so. Right. I would imagine so. It just blows my mind. He just was like, hey, I'm going to do zoology. And he's, you know.
Hey, why not? You know, like.
He's that.
You know, people who are smart can do whatever they want, you know, if you think about it. So just really inspiring in that aspect. And I could go on and on. But if you want to hear more, listen to my podcast.
Which is called, again, just so everyone hears it again.
Hi. So I host, it's called The Family Cast. Food and music is life. Yes, that's what family stands for. And the reason I say yes at the end is because in the kitchen we say yes, chef. So, you know, if they don't hear me, or if I want to know that they heard me, I say, you know, give me 2 quarts of stock. Yes. And they go, yes, chef, or whatever, you know, whatever the case may be, or heard, or, you know, yes. So that's an homage to the kitchen, and then food and music being life, my life, because they intersect. So The Family Cast, available everywhere. Man, we got so many more records to do. So number 3 out of my 5, in no particular order, I think is going to have to be Pennywise Unknown Road. So Epitaph Records, the beginning of Dogwood. This one is another one where not only are they, I love them, and they're just ultimate California surf rock, surf punk. They sound like all their predecessors, and so many bands have sounded like them since. The singer, I found out later, became he calls it a born again. He became a Christian at some point in his life. And so he's writing about it on this record. The lyrics are inspired by Robert Frost's poem, you know, the road less traveled kind of thing. And all these biblical allegories are on this record. And he even talks, there's even a song where he's talking to God, and he says, oh my God, why have you forsaken me? Like in the song. And I was like, whoa, this is so rad. He's singing exactly what I want to say, you know, when I heard it. So Unknown Road by Pennywise, it's kind of the same reason I like Against the Grain, but so I won't get too far into it, but that's definitely my favorite record of Pennywise's. And if you listen to Dogwood, you'll hear these influences into Dogwood, the things I'm saying. And then, like I said earlier, Strong Arm, so that's kind of my hardcore one, but another harder pick, I guess, if you will, would be like Metallica, Kill 'Em All. So to me, which is their punk rock record, their punk thrash, like they were still I mean, they were good musicians, but they were still like not polished, not so huge. And if you listen to that record, it's just so good. And I can hear immediately the influences that they gave to other bands from that record. Like even the band like The Crucified sounds like they're trying to sound like Metallica and Minor Threat put together. So Metallica, Kill 'Em All would be my like metal thrash pick over any other Metallica stuff, because I mean, inspiring to me as far as the way he's projecting his voice on that record, and just the lyrical content was somewhat kind of like personal and funny. If you really look at it, he's kind of singing about partying or whatever, but like really good songs. I don't know. And they still play some of those songs to this day in their set list, you know? And that was like 1982 or something like that.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to go to Minor Threat as my number 5. Cause as we know, not only they coined the term straight edge by, you know, without meaning to, but
yeah,
I love the message, I guess, of everything Ian's saying and singing, and just it's hardcore, and he's like calling out people for being phony and fake, and just like just all that teen angst and post-adolescent angst and college angst, just like he's just yelling at everybody, you know. And and he's also talking about, when I talk to you, it's like screaming at a wall. It's like nobody's hearing me. I'm yelling and no one's hearing me. This is so crazy. And again, that was me. I was like, I'm yelling, I'm being rageful, I'm being rebellious, and I'm doing a bunch of stupid stuff, and no one's like cares. I mean, my mom cares. She didn't want me to do that, but like, it's not getting me to where I want to go. I it's not fulfilling. And, I felt like I was fulfilled when I listened to Minor Threat, if that makes sense. I felt fulfilled by all these records that I'm talking about, actually. So those are just 5, but I would say Minor Threat's definitely like my hardcore punk pick.
So love it.
Those are some 5, and I could go on forever.
Those are really good 5. I don't think anyone has said any of those 5 yet. Mason, can you?
There's definitely been people who have mentioned Metallica, but not that album.
Yeah, I don't think we've ever gotten Minor Threat. I don't know if we've ever had Bad Religion. I don't know if we've had some of those other
what?
Bands. Yeah. So you have a totally unique list for the most part, I believe.
Yeah.
Awesome. And I'd even say some of my favorite bands. Those are just some of my favorite records, you know?
Right.
Right.
So that's awesome.
Great list.
Thank you. Thank you. Great I love list. It.
Josh, I love your list. I can tell that you are someone who deeply listens to music instead of just is a pedestrian, which, you know, we expect from our musicians, but sometimes that's not exactly the case. So I definitely appreciate that list. At this time, we'd like to ask you to plug anything you'd like to plug.
Oh, sure. I mean, I do the podcast. That's one thing, Family Cast. And then I do a lot of stuff through the podcast. Like I do a lot of my recipes and, you know, I try to have my kids on the podcast doing some like voiceovers and stuff. So it's really involved things because since I'm not a touring musician anymore, that's been my kind of creative outlet. But I do music, St. Didacus, and we have some songs out and we're still doing some more. So between those two things and culinary at Harvest Kitchen, I'm the chef there. excuse me.
Where is Harvest Kitchen at?
In San Diego. So Harvest Kitchen is, we're like basically a boutique caterers, but we do like super rad events for like, you know, Hollywood photo shoots and private weddings for the stars in Palm Springs. And like just weird stuff that I never thought I'd be doing, but I'm doing it and I'm having fun and people are liking the food and stuff. So I bring a punk rock element into the kitchen. So I really relate to other punk rock chefs. So any punk rock chefs out there, hit me up and we can collaborate on something. Like we can do like a bunch of cool music videos or whatever, you know, and I can sing.
Heck yeah, dude.
I love it.
Love that. Anything else you'd like to plug?
I mean, those are kind of my main three. I could shout out my family, but they don't really have like, you know, they don't really like have products or anything like that, but you know,
doesn't need to be a product involved.
Big ups to Lisa, the wife. She's always been a big supporter of my creativity or at least my try at creativity. Saying like, oh, you should do that. I'm like, oh man, I'm so tired. I don't want to be a chef anymore. I want to go back to like teaching or like 9 to 5 or managing Trader Joe's or something. She's like, cool. You're going to be so bored in a week. she's like always keeping me like doing what I'm doing, kind of knowing me, you know, in all senses of the word, like knowing that that I need to be creating, not just really like working for somebody or like doing something like creative, but like creating, you know. Yeah,
for sure.
So and then my kids are inspirational. Eden, Rhythm, and Xander.
Those are great names.
Thank
those
you.
Are there. those are so West Coast names
and very Gen Z.
Yeah, I dig
it. I mean, yeah. At one point in my writings, in my journaling or whatever, I had written out names of kids that I wanted to have.
And which one's your favorite?
Which of those kids? Oh, my favorite kid's not even my kid. Just kidding. Just kidding.
They're awesome.
That's
the right answer. Josh, it's been a wonderful, wonderful time having you on.
I appreciate it.
I was very excited about this episode, and you delivered.
And now you're not?
Now you delivered. Well, I'm no longer excited because it's over.
Oh, okay.
That bums me out. So we would definitely love to have you back on at some point.
And, let's go, yeah. We'll do a special food pairing one.
Yeah, let's do it. Great. That sounds good. I love it. Thanks again.
Mm-hmm.
We'll talk to you another time, man.
Black Sheep.